So what was this Aardvark Club, and how did you think of such a name?
I can't remember how the name came. It was one of the people who came up with the name.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It was, I don't know what the origin of it was, but we were just known as the Aardvarks. But we're all members of this science club called Student Science Society. Andy Roman was the one who actually coined the term Student Science Society, and we actually had our own journal, and it was a really good.
Wow.
Yeah, we would have these big field trips all over the country. And
how big was this international school?
It's about 800 people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So there were, now were these all Americans, or were they
foreigners? No, it was about 75% to 80% Americans, and then the others, foreigners from all over the world. So.
Yeah. And did any ties send their...
There were some ties, yeah. But they tended to be from, you know, very wealthy families.
Yeah.
I remember one girl who was the daughter of an ambassador to Russia or Soviet Union. And,
wow.
You know, people that sort. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a great school. I mean, I remember, you know, having all kinds of friends from all over the world. And one friend actually is Chinese Thai, but is now American citizen. You know, he's now back in Bangkok, but he's like one of the closest friends that I have, and he was, you know, the best man at my wedding here. And but he, you know, grew up in Thailand, you know, but from a Chinese, you know, family. And I have another friend who's Chinese, who's from Taiwan, who is now in Chicago in his own computer company, but he. He and I were sort of, you know, friends, good friends, because his mother was a math teacher. And so when we were stuck with math problems, we'd always just go up to his mother, and she would help us. And so we're both really, you know, good in math because of his mother.
Yeah.
There were opportunities that you would just never have if I went to high school here.
Yeah, like, there. For instance?
Or just... being able to, you know, relate to people from all over the world that, you know, they're not just, you know, immigrants. I mean, they're really there.
Yeah.
I remember having a very bad crush on a girl from Israel. And, you know, it was the Six-Day War, you know, happened. We would talk about those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a very American type school, and I had all the American stuff there.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Junior senior prom.
Right.
You know, we had, but you know, instead of going to, I don't know what they do here, but you know, we had, we would rent out these hotel, you know, lobbies. And,
oh yeah.
You know,
well, that sounds true.
You know, it was.
And did you play football or
no? I didn't do any sports. I don't think I did any sports. I mean, you know, I did it as part of the, you know, the required PE stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
we're also in the Explorers. This Aardvark, part of the Aardvark group, was also in the Explorers. It was the first Explorers group started by an American military guy, and you know, would go all over the country exploring. You know, officially certified by the American Explorers Organization.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Go to Lake Kwai, where the, you know, the film was, the bridge over River Kwai was made. And, swim across the river. And, you know, these things are, I mean, in retrospect, you know, things that when we're doing it, it was just like a kid's thing to do.
Right.
So it was nothing special. But you know, if I wish my kids could do that, what I did, and I think that would be great.
Was the expectations at this high school that these students would go on to college?
Yeah, a large percentage. I don't know the exact percentage, but a large percentage of them did go to.
Yeah,
a lot of people went to college. Yeah, I know all the members of the Aardvark, you know, went someplace.
And was the curriculum technically or scientifically oriented, or did it have an emphasis in one particular curriculum, like a technical?
It really varied. I remember, you know, after starting college, compared to the my friends in college who went through high school here, there were some things that were very strong in the international school, and other things that were really weak. Biology was really weak, and I remember not quite prepared in college, in biology.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm,
because the textbook was really old, whereas physics was really strong. And I actually wanted to be a physicist when I started college.
Okay.
So, a very good teacher, physics teacher. He was actually Indian. I remember I really wanted to be a physicist. And I was, really prepared. I took the advanced physics courses when I, started college. And I remember also math was also very strong. It was an American teacher, Mr. Bakken, who was also one of the very influential teachers that I had in high school. Who, would sit with students afterwards and just talk about all kinds of things, and he would listen, and he taught the calculus class, so I was already prepared in that. But biology was really weak, and even though I had a very good biology teacher, the textbook was really not very good. And chemistry, I think, was the standard.
And what about this interest and ability in writing? Where was this during high school?
My English teacher, Mrs. Saluja. She was actually from Massachusetts, but she married an Indian businessman in Thailand. So, she was really insistent on creative writing, and that got me interested in, Being a philosophy major helped also, because that's all you did. You had to do a lot of writing, so that was helpful. I didn't do philosophy because I wanted to do the writing, but
right.
It just happened to that discipline happened to emphasize writing. So.
And were your teachers trying to encourage you to go into one direction or another?
I think everybody expected me to do some science later, but I was president of the Student Science Society in a couple of years, and to organize all these. We had a science fair. It was one of the biggest events in the year. And, I think all the teachers had expectation that I was going to science. I never even thought myself or neither did anybody else that I would do biology though. Later,
yeah.
Or medicine.
And so, did you have the best and biggest science project experiment?
Yeah, I won a grand prize, I think, one year, and first prize.
Do you remember what your project was?
Yeah, it was called, friends in this email, and he reminded me. it was totally just, I just sort of made it up out of my head. There was no experiments. It was called the conception of. Life in the nine planets or eight planets. So knowing what we knew at the time about the environment on these planets, I try to figure out what kind of life forms would exist in those places.
Yeah.
And it would make drawings based on what I thought. And so and that won the grand prize. So it's just all congratulations. They had some idea how much oxygen was in, there, and it was mostly methane, like in Jupiter. Then what would you expect the life form to look like? That type of thing.
So that's wow! What, now, where did this idea come from? Can you remember that?
Yeah, it was in Japan. When I was in Jinai, I had a very good friend who was also into sciences. It was a real close buddy, Carl Mehring, and we'd always just talk about. Planets. We're really into planets at the time. And
life forms on other planets?
Yeah, just imagining what kind of life forms would be.
Okay.
And then when I moved to Thailand, I thought maybe why don't I just make this into a science fair project. So I actually read a lot of books, to learn about what they knew at the time about planets and then put this together. On the weekends, we would go down to Yokohama on the train to go caddying in a golf course. That's how we earn some money to do things, and you know.
So there were a few little athletic tendencies in you.
Yeah, no, it was more, you know, to just travel around. I guess I was already interested in traveling around at that time. So. Carl's mother was also Japanese, and so we had a lot of things to share.
And what was it about physics that you found interesting that you wanted to be a physicist?
I don't know. I think the teachers probably just,
yeah.
You know, it was just really interesting. I don't know what. I guess, you know, if I was going to make a robot and things, I had to be a physicist.
Okay, so you're still thinking about these.
Yeah, I was still thinking about
these. And you're still reading these cartoons and.
I still have them. I read them to my kids now.
Wow.
You know.
And they were in English or Japanese?
They're in Japanese.
Yeah.
I translate them, you know, simultaneously as I read it. So.
Yeah.
My daughter, the older daughter, is going to a Japanese school on the weekends. She's going to learn Japanese. So.
You do speak Japanese at home? No,
I don't. Yeah, my wife doesn't speak any Japanese, so it's difficult. But they know. I mean, Samantha knows a lot of words in Japanese, and she can read the hiragana. But no, physics. I think it was just basically the combination of this physics teacher in high school and this math teacher. The physics and math were, you know, I really liked both of them.
So what did you see yourself doing then? You know, if you became a physicist, what were you? You know, what did you think you'd be doing in college, and then
yeah, I probably thought I was going to be in academic, you know, in college, something, physics teacher, and doing things.
Yeah. So when it came time to start thinking about like these in junior year, when you have to start taking the SATs and things like that, how were you going about thinking about conceptualizing your future and what you wanted to do and where you needed to go to fulfill those kind of dreams?
Well, I was particularly interested in particle physics.
Okay.
When I was in high school, I remember there was a book that I checked out of the library, and I got really fascinated. And it was a book. I still remember it was a paperback book. It was 1963 publication, and you know, for me, that was like one of the newest books, you know, that I had at the time. And it was all about, you know, it's called Fundamental Particles, the book. And it's about mesons and muons and things, and I got really fascinated, and so that's what I wanted to pursue. So that's why I applied to Stanford, because Stanford had the linear accelerator where they did those things.
Yeah.
That's really the main reason I wanted to go to Stanford.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't know if I was going to be accepted, but you know.
Did you apply to any other schools?
Yeah, in California, I did.
Yeah.
I didn't apply to Berkeley though, but I applied to UCLA, I think, and. Other smaller, one of the Claremont colleges.
Okay. Yeah.
So there are all sciences, you know, stuff. Caltech I applied to.
Okay.
But, you know, linear accelerator was what was really attracted me.
Yeah.
So one of the first things I did when I came to Stanford was to visit the linear accelerator.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and see how this goes with this noise here.
Okay.
Did you get accepted at Caltech?
No, I didn't get accepted to Caltech. I don't think. Yeah, I got into UCLA and Stanford and the Claremont colleges. I don't know if I had already heard from it, I can't remember, but when Stanford gave me the scholarship, I think I withdrew from the others. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one last question, and we can probably, this is probably just a reminder that I need to wrap up.
Okay.
How was it that you made the transition from wanting to be a physicist to majoring in philosophy?
I think, you know, this was in the late 60s, early 70s, right? And so the Vietnam War was going on. No, this was actually, late 60s, 68 to 72.
You entered college in the 67?
No, I started in 68.
Started started 68, okay.
And so I remember even the first week at Stanford, you know, the orientation, there were all these forces, political forces, trying to influence students in one way or the other. And, you know, it was a very traumatic time, I think, for a lot of students, you know, facing the draft for the males, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the demonstrations at Berkeley and at Stanford, too. And, you know, I guess it's also a period where people, you know, wanted to do something, quote, meaningful, you know.
Right.
Sort of, I think nowadays people sort of look back upon that period as being very simplistic or kind of foolish or, you know, overly idealistic. But, you know, it was really genuine. I mean,
right.
People really wanted to do something meaningful. And so during the summers when I went back to Thailand, you know, I was teaching English during those summers. And I got to see a lot of Thailand, you know, the real Thailand that I didn't see as a when I was living there as a high school kid. And, you know, I really wanted to come back to Thailand, do something. But I also, you know, started learning about Buddhism in Thailand. And, you know, I said physics was not the way to sort of really learn about meaning, meaning in life. And I decided, you know, I wanted to do something. That made you think about things more. And so I decided to major in philosophy. And I took some philosophy course and I really enjoyed it. And, so it was more of a, I guess I looked at, you know, the college period as not so much preparation for some career, but as a time to really use that time to really, you know, learn about something, about life. And, you know, where in your, you know, life, you have 4 years where you can really do what you want to do. You know, you can't find that kind of time any other time in your life.
And
so it was important, and you know, that's what I decided to do. But then as in the subsequent years, by the time I think I was a junior year when I went to Thailand the third time, you know, I realized I couldn't do much as a philosopher either in Thailand. So that's when I decided to go to medical school. It became a little more practical. And, but again, you know, and the reason I wanted to go to medical school was I wanted to do something meaningful. You know, the reason was that I wanted to go to Thailand to do something in medicine in Thailand, to do something there. So that was the motivation. I never thought I'd end up in, you know, doing basic research later, but that was sort of the beginning of the reason for my going into medicine.
Okay. And what did it mean to do something meaningful at this point? To do something meaningful? What did it mean to you?
I don't know. I think whatever that was meant at that time, you know, sort of changed, I'm sure, many times. But, you know, I think I wanted to, you know, discover myself, I guess, and what you know, the meaning of life was. You know, just the timeline was very important. I mean, there was a war going on, and my father, you know, was part of the process. And you know, a certain feeling of guilt. You know, my friends going off. Getting drafted, and I had a high number, so I didn't get drafted. My best friend actually he was Thai, came to Stanford also. It was a year behind me, and you know he got very quickly involved in anti-war activities on campus, and he got expelled. And he, because he wasn't an American, he got deported back to Thailand. He comes from a very wealthy, as a Chinese Thai family. His father was like the ambassador to Thailand from when Singapore broke away from Malaysia. His father became ambassador from Singapore to Thailand. And his father, who was a big businessman, grew up in Taiwan, who was also a kind of a very fiery radical in Taiwan when he was young. But anyways, Kuang Ping got sent back, and then he got drafted into their army in Singapore because they had a compulsory draft system. And, you know, this was everything that I guess was against his beliefs. So, but anyways, and I lost touch. I couldn't communicate with him because the military would open the letters.
Yeah.
His mother is actually a well-known translator of American, you know, or English language novels into Chinese. So I would write to his mother, and then mother would communicate with him. But several years, I think it was 1977, when I was in Thailand as a medical student, you know, doing an elective, I picked up a copy of Newsweek, and there's a picture of my friend in the paper. Turns out he was arrested in Singapore because he wrote, after he got out of the army, he joined the Far East Economic Review, the journal, and he wrote an article that the Singapore government considered to be military secret. And it wasn't, you know, it was in New York Times. So they arrested him and, you know, tortured him and all kinds of things. And it was all written in this Newsweek for Time Magazine. And I saw him several years later, but, you know, he went through a lot of years. And it all started from Stanford days. And I didn't go through that. And, you know, there was a certain sense of guilt. And so, you know, I wanted to do something. I think I was, that meant something, I guess. And, but I wasn't as crazy as some people, or not as brave, maybe. You know, I think I wanted to do it in my own pace. And also going to Bangkok, you know, I mean, you see things that you just would never see in the U.S. You know, that's when I first learned about kids, you know, selling, you know, chiclets, you know, all over the streets. And, you know, learn about, you discover things that you just didn't know about. And, you know, you couldn't ignore those things, so. You know, then college was, maybe I was just very, you know, easily affected. But, you know, it was very important. You know, like, I think those 4 years were probably the most seminal. It was probably the seminal 4 years of my life.
Well, I think we reached a good point to stop today.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Great.